For too long, the fertility market has been bewildering, overwhelming, and frankly, I think has downright ignored the needs and difficult experiences of the people they're supposed to be serving. Ovum has made it their mission to change this completely. Now, I am extremely choosy about who I promote on this podcast because I'm very protective of my listeners and audience, which is why you've probably only ever heard one spoken ad like this before. So it's with complete confidence, excitement, and pride that I can share this amazing company with you. Ovum care about you, truly. From creating products to support conception and fertility that are designed by doctors and backed by the latest science without cutting any corners, from adding access to meditations I've personally written and recorded inside their pregnancy test boxes, Ovum is founded by individuals who've navigated infertility themselves. I really couldn't be more proud to partner with them and tell you about them. Ovum is driven by the belief that everyone who is trying to conceive deserves better, and I am 100% behind this ethos. So head over to startwithovum.com and use code LIFERAFT10 for 10% off their tests and supplements.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Welcome to this live recording of Fertility Life Raft, the podcast. I am really delighted to have the marvellous Vanessa Hay on this morning. We are recording live with some of my members again, and it's an absolute pleasure to see you again, Vanessa. The last time I saw you was at that amazing event in London, which was just last month, wasn't it, in October?
I feel like it was longer than that, but yeah, if it was, yes, that was the last time we saw each other, but the first time we'd met in person.
Exactly, the first and last. The last, yeah. I don't know. It was a moment.
I know what you're trying to say.
It was a moment, whatever it was. Yeah. It really was, because I've known of you, Vanessa, for a long time. Obviously, you've been advocating and writing about fertility and everything that goes with it for quite a long time now, and doing some amazing work. So I've known about you, we've had a few messages, but that was the first time we met. And I have to say, and I said this in my email this morning to remind people that we were doing this recording, I was like, Vanessa's amazing. She's an advocate, she's a writer, she's a speaker, and speaks so well, and also gives the best hugs ever. You gathered me up in this lovely hug and I was like, oh, I have missed live events so much just for that connection, that room.
You know what? I hate the fact, because I am a hugger, by the way. So thank you for validating the fact that I try my best. I'm very, very intentional with my hugs. And because of COVID, and we're kind of finally past that phase, because I'm a hugger, I have to say to people, firstly, I'm a hugger and I hug well. So just letting you know, because boundaries, isn't it? Like, people are still, you know, what's the word, shielding? I can't even remember what the word is, but
oh yeah, ooh, all that language that I just don't, brings out the shivers. But yeah, I love that you have to kind of by the way, I'm a hugger, I'm gonna hug
yeah,
you.
I am a hugger, yeah.
But yeah, I loved it. And what it does, I think, is it kind of instantly brings you into a completely new realm with someone. And I'm bringing it up because I do feel like there was just this instant, like, right, no, she's my kind of lady. I can get on board with a lady who gives me a massive hug. There's a delivery guy waving at me through the window. I'm like, yes, hello, I won't be connecting with you right now. So no Vanessa, problem. enough of me waffling around. I really wanted to have you on for lots and lots of reasons. Number one, I think, you know, the fact that you are taking up space and have been now, and I mean that in a really positive way, taking up space and sharing your story so bravely, so honestly, and so powerfully. I really wanted to ask you, first of all, do you mind sharing a little bit of your story with us first about how?
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for the lovely introduction. It really helps to start things off well, because I think that the hardest thing, in a weird way, is when somebody says, tell me a bit about yourself, or introduce yourself, you're like, oh yeah, who am I?
Awkward.
So yeah, thank you for the introduction. So where do I start? So as Alice has said, hi everybody, Millie and Hannah. And thank you for joining us. I'm Vanessa Hay, and I would describe myself at the moment, because life is always evolving and changing. I will definitely say my experience, which I'll talk you through, has kind of propelled me into where I am now. So I'd say I'm a writer, a speaker, and a women's health advocate. And the reason why I've chosen women's health words carefully is because when it came to my fertility journey and the fact that I've had losses along the way, I realized the big picture. So you would be familiar with her, Alice, Regina Townsend, Brown, yeah. Broken Egg lady.
Yeah.
She's got this really, really powerful saying that infertility is, and I say this carefully because I have children now, and I know that's not everybody else's eventuality sometimes, but infertility is bigger than babies. And what I mean by that is, even beyond having my children, I realized that I needed to take my health more seriously. I was always diagnosed with unexplained. Shows how far I've gone
together. I feel like
I was diagnosed with unexplained fertility, so I'll kind of go talk you through that in a moment. And I always call it unexplored fertility, and that's the reason why I thought, actually, the children are here, and I'm grateful and I feel blessed about that, but there are things that I need to look into, because I'm sure there was stuff hanging in the balance that may have been causing this situation. So that's the reason why I say I'm a women's health advocate. In terms of my journey, it started soon after I got married. So my current husband, Andrew, call him Drew, we met in university in 2005. Oh gosh, we've been together for a long time. And we got married. We were young, so it took a while for us to kind of move forward. So we got married in 2014. And straight away, I'm a Christian, so we tried to abstain from sexual intercourse. But so as soon as we obviously got married, we were open to the fact that we wanted children. We wanted to, I use the word, not start a family, but we were open to growing our family. I like to use those words. And I came off the pill 6 months after being on it. It wasn't really working for me. And the fact that I wasn't on it for a long time, I found it strange that my periods were very sparse or more or less non-existent. So we're now into 2015, and I haven't had a period for 9 months. I've looked into it and they've said, right, your progesterone's low, but everything else is okay based on the tests that we've done, hence unexplored infertility. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why you shouldn't get pregnant. We're going to put you on Clomid and see if that helps to jumpstart ovulation, get you pregnant, you should be fine. And at this point, I'm 27, 28 years old. So they're thinking, I'm a spring chicken, shouldn't be any issue. Well, six to 9 months down the line, so we're now towards the end of 2015, still no periods. I think even with taking Clomid, it still hadn't helped me to even ovulate, let alone get pregnant. So at that point, I remember sitting in my GP's office and he sat down, kind of leaned back like this and said, there isn't any reason why you shouldn't be able to get pregnant, but you're not. So we're just going to, you know, escalate this and, you know, choose a fertility clinic. I'm local to Leicester, so I chose my local clinic in Leicester. And they said, yep, yeah, on your bike, there you go. Let them help you. So 2016 now, I think it is, they've told me that because you know how it works with criteria. Well, if I assume that people here will, I'm obviously married, don't have any children from previous relationships. They say that I'm entitled to. In my area, it was one full funded cycle of IVF and three IUIs. Before I could go on to that, they said, can you do 9 more months of Clomid? I could have screened, but you know, when you want a baby, you just do what you have to do. So I said, yep, fine. 9 months later, still none of those cycles of Clomid helped me. So we're now towards the latter part of 2016. I had an IUI. And that, I'm trying to remember what happened. It was a textbook cycle. Everything worked out well, but we didn't get pregnant. And I remember at this point feeling exhausted mentally, physically, and saying, look, I know I have 2 more free cycles of IUIs, but I just want to go straight onto IVF, because you know how when you're so desperate, you do all the research. So I'm researching, finding out that IUI cycles are more or less similar to natural conception, to which, if I'm correct, the chances of getting pregnant each cycle for natural conception is 10%. So I'm thinking there is no hope for me. If I try and do this two times over and it's not successful, I think I will break down. So I said, look, I want to go straight over to IVF. I remember the nurse saying to me, if you do that, remember, you only have one fresh cycle. So if that isn't successful, you can't go back to the goals that you've missed. That's it. And I said, I'm willing to take that risk. So started IVF in September 2016. Again, I was fortunate enough to have quite textbook cycles. So egg collection, collected quite a few eggs, quite a few mature, were mature, fertilized, ended up with, I think it was 6 embryos. And you know how they're so really specific, like, oh, these are gorgeous looking embryos. That meant nothing to me. That meant nothing to me, but that's okay. I'll take that. And I had a transfer in, I think it was, the reason why I always remember my transfer day, or my, yeah, I think my transfer date was, it was a couple of days after Trump became president. Oh, in fact, my egg collection was on Trump's winning election day. And then obviously a couple of days later, I did the transfer. It was successful, but unfortunately resulted in early miscarriage, or what they say, a biochemical pregnancy. Mm. And I was just, again, obviously this is now 2-3 years in. Mm. So I was just desperate to move forward. So I needed to wait for a couple of cycles for my period to come back. And that's awful for somebody who has irregular periods. I was praying that I would get a cycle. It did come. So April 2017, I did my second frozen embryo transfer cycle. And that was a double transfer because of what happened the first cycle. And that resulted in my first son, who's 5 next year, Sebastian. It was successful, but apparently it started off as a twin pregnancy and we lost one. That's what they said, because my results were so high, but I had really bad bleeding and still have this thriving 4-year-old chips loving son. So yeah, I guess something happened along the way, but I'll take it for what it is. It was a successful cycle. Mm. So that was 2018. He was born in 2018 in February. And I guess life started to feel normal again. You know, after so many years of trying, life started to feel normal again. You know, was enjoying motherhood. And then about 18 months after, I fell pregnant. Sorry, not that word. I'm very, very intentional about my language. Sorry. So I didn't fall pregnant, but I conceived naturally in September 2019? It wasn't September 2019. I think it was August 2019. And that pregnancy ended up being an ectopic, which was, I thought infertility was hard, but under the NICE recommendations or whatever recommendations, I think an ectopic is seen as a type of miscarriage, but it's not the same care pathway. So it was traumatic in the fact that because my tube had ruptured, because the baby was apparently 9 weeks. And sorry, I need to put the trigger warning out there. It ruptured and I nearly lost my life, but thankfully I'm still here. But my tube was removed. That was the only way that I could survive. And you know, babies don't thrive in ectopic pregnancies. And so that was really, really difficult. And it was just before lockdown. So all the services that I would have needed to check on my general health afterwards, get mental health support, they were all closed following that. So I guess 2020 and 2021 were very difficult. 2019 and 2020 were very, very difficult years. But I guess I just focused on writing. I didn't mention that after I had Sebastian, my first child, that's when I started my writing, my advocacy work. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really respect and value people that aren't afraid to tell the truth and share their journeys, even whilst there isn't a light at the end of the tunnel. I very much wanted to do everything in hindsight because I just wasn't brave enough. But because I started writing in 2018 and after I had the ectopic pregnancy, I was already kind of in the flow of being this advocate and the person that was sharing. So obviously, maybe a couple of months after having the ectopic, I informed my followers and people that I, you know, share with on my blog about what happened. Anyway, so 2020, obviously, there's nothing to say about it because we were all stuck at home. towards the end of 2020, I'd gone through, I was back to, it felt like a full circle moment. I was back to no periods at all. GPs were speculating, or my GP rather was speculating, that it was because of the stress from the ectopic pregnancy, but I felt something wasn't quite right. And I got it checked out, and then I was finally diagnosed with something that I felt like I've had for years, and I think was contributing to infertility all this time. I was diagnosed with PCOS in November 2020. And the reason why I'm passionate about women's health is because there was no help out there, because GPs were closed. I'm still on the list to be referred to a gynecology service. But within that time, I thought, what can I do for myself? And I was just researching about foods, diets, exercise. I had a very short-term veggie diet from like November 2020 until February 2021, when I found out that with one chew and PCOS, I was pregnant naturally. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I am a believer, and I honestly feel like that was just a miracle from God. I can't even tell you now how that worked, but that's now my one-year-old son. He was born on Friday, and definitely came with a bang. Elysium, my one-year-old. That's where we are now. We have two beautiful boys, and I continue to do the work. I understand some people may want to move forward with maybe not doing the advocacy, the writing, but I think because I felt quite alone, I realized that there was a gap in support when it comes to the intricacies of everybody's journey. I feel like I felt compelled to continue to kind of spread that message of hope. And so, you know, two boys down the line, I'm still doing the work as much as I can, obviously from a different place, and my message is slightly different, but I guess this is why I'm on here today as well. So that is my story.
Thank you so much for sharing it. I was scribbling away there as you were chatting, so there's so much I want to kind of, you know, explore with you a little bit, because I think there's a lot that comes up, you know, everything that you went through. I mean, yeah, the fact that you're so intentional with your language is so helpful, because I think there's a huge problem, isn't there, with language that is used in the fertility world, both from professionals and from people who don't understand, but also people who are in it, who are just, we're so conditioned to use the language that we've been taught that we don't recognize the impact that it can have. Can you talk to me a little bit more about why you're so intentional with your language?
Yeah, and thank you for acknowledging that, Millie, and everybody else that's acknowledged that. The reason why I'm so intentional is because the words that you hear a lot in this space is taboos and breaking the silence. And I think there's a lot of things that can contribute to the taboo and just the, what's the word that I'm looking for? It's not really coming, but there's a lot of things that contribute to that, the silence around infertility and the journey itself. And it's the words that we use. Mm-hmm. They carry a lot of weight. So something that I learned along the way is there was a point in time when me and my husband, I think it was after our first failed cycle of IUI, well, there was only one cycle anyway, because that's what I chose, but the failed cycle of IUI, my husband and I was so down, so depressed, and I thought, how much more can we do this? And I remember I sat down on the bed with my husband and I said, look, I said, if this marriage ends up only being us two, then so be it, because we are a family. And that's the reason why I had to become intentional about saying that we're not starting a family. Because what if I had to bear in mind, at some point in my journey, I had to bear in mind that this family may only be me and Drew. And what happens is if we ended up being fortunate. So if we ended up being fortunate and not saying that, rather than saying we're growing our family and starting a family, and that was a message that was put to somebody else who is still very much on the thick of that journey, that's what people internalize. The reason why there's a shame is because people are internalizing this message that you are not a family until you have the children, you have the babies.
I'm sitting here like going, mm-hmm. It's so true. And we don't even realize how much we're internalizing, and actually giving you that power back and just taking a little step back and going, okay, let me just think about the language I'm using and how impactful it is. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you don't still desperately want to have children. It just means that you are also recognizing that you are absolutely a family before anything like that does happen, or whatever is going to happen. And I love that you kind of had that moment of just going, do you know what, if this is it, we're a family.
Yeah. And I don't mean to, it's easy. I have to caveat because I want to be careful. And I want to acknowledge that there are, you know, there are people on here that are probably nowhere near the journey, or they're still in the early part of the journey, or however they perceive it. So it's easy for me to say that. And I acknowledge that. What's the best word to use? I may be speaking from a place of privilege, but it's also important for me to say that during my journey, that was a learning point. The learning point was actually, where is this shame coming from? Is it the fact that there's an expectation? Well, 100% is, particularly in my community, Black communities, where we, and I think all communities, but Black communities, we're heavily pronatalist. But on the other hand, it was just the fact that if I allowed people to think that we aren't a family until we have these children, then it wasn't going to make us as a couple feel any better about ourselves. Because let's be honest, even, dare I say this, there are people that will have families and somewhere down the line something happens. So the way you look at a family or a nuclear family has to change. And that was the reason why I became so intentional about my language. And I still am, even with two children.
Yes. And that's absolutely a thank you for that. And I think the just caveating is important, isn't it? Because we just acknowledge that everybody is not only on different journeys, but internally are at different stages with what they're taking from what's happening as well. And that learning, you know, I mean, the LifeRock membership is a sort of self-development membership. So we're always kind of, it's a very open-minded place, which is why I love it. But, you know, everyone here, people who do listen to this podcast, are here to go, okay, let's hear it from people who have found ways through this terrible time, which has given something of meaning, something to hang on to, even if things are not going the way that they want them to go. Now, you mentioned there around in your communities and Black communities, there's this stigma still that is partly, from what I understand, has driven you as well to your advocacy and to your writing. Where are we at now? Like, over the last few years, there's been so much more conversation around Black communities and different communities across the world, across the country. Where are we at now with fertility representation there?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I'll try my best to answer it, Alice. I would say that, and I wouldn't necessarily say it's down to me, but that I'm definitely seeing more women of colour speaking out, not necessarily just Black women. I'm talking women from Asian communities, the LGBTQ communities. You know, there's, I think generally speaking, representation is much better. And I'll be honest and say, within my platform, through my writing, through my speaking, people will sometimes say, oh, you know, why is the focus on, why is my focus on the Black communities? And I am firm in saying this, I can only speak on what is true to my lived experience. I cannot speak on behalf of the LGBT community because that isn't my experience, or that isn't an intersection that I identify with. I am a Black woman and a Christian woman, and all of those aspects of who I am, my identity, because we very much inform how we see things. The lens of how we live and experience infertility is largely, in parts, but largely based on how we identify ourselves. So I can only speak in the reality of my lived experience. And if I'm talking back to, I spoke about my journey and the fact that it started around 2015. And at the time, no word of a lie, I was on Instagram, and a lot of the accounts were mainly white accounts. And if anything, there was nothing wrong with that. In fact, I was inspired by the bravery of these women who would show their identities and say, look, this is, and show the bum bullets or whatever you call them, everything. And there was a sadness of, if only I came from a community that were able to share. But there's so much we have to uphold. you know, for an example, even from a Christian aspect, not even necessarily my color of skin, I was speaking to, I'm not Catholic, I come from a Pentecostal church background, but I was speaking to Catholics, not necessarily Black Catholic, just all Catholics that would say, we can't even utter the word IVF because we believe that, people believe that we're choosing God if we're going for IVF. But when I'm dealing with, when I'm dealing with that layer of intersection, plus being a Black woman who, you know, there is an expectation that we grow our families, and it's just, you know, there's a threat to the family line if we do it. There's not necessarily a it's not seen as a glamorous thing if you're choosing motherhood on a solo premise, because all of the, I think it's very much down to at a societal level, how much we have to, identity politics. A lot of the decisions that we make are based on identity politics. So it's all of those things, we're making decisions based on upholding all of those values from how we see ourselves and how the world see ourselves. So I could only speak my truth in that lens. I couldn't do it for anybody else. And things have definitely gotten better. What I would say is, now kind of coming through and being a different part of that journey, I will always do the work for my community. But what's bigger is the fact that at the essence or the crux of the journey of infertility is a woman and a man or a couple or individuals who want to grow their family. And the underlying message behind my advocacy work is to help those people, essentially. But what I do know is that because we are visual human beings, whoever is that person that's reading my blog or reading an article and seeing my face, if it happens to be a Black couple or Black individuals, at least they can identify. So I know that the work is still being done, regardless of how the message is put forward.
Yes.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. I mean, yeah. I feel like I could talk to you for hours on this, but I'm really conscious of how long we have. But absolutely. And I think, you know, I've heard you speak so, so well as well on the, you know, representation within the health, within healthcare settings and the issues that are there. And that we have to, and that's why your work matters so, so much, Vanessa. And like just coming on these podcasts, keeping writing your blog, you know, you've had a lot of press in the past, all of that, and making sure that everyone feels seen and can identify with you is part of that change and part of the change that will come from the grassroots shift in healthcare, yeah. Hopefully.
It's interesting because I was in Paris. I was in Paris, it was a business trip, and I had a friend, and she's a dual heritage lady. She's half British, half English, half Gambian, so she's mixed race, Black and white. And she said to me, what was behind the whole, this is what I've been through as a Black woman. And I said, the way that I always say it, and I think I mentioned this when I was speaking on the panel that we met each other at, is it's the same boat, that the journey and the experience of infertility is the same boat, but it's a different storm, essentially. So how we experience it is different based on our surroundings, external forces, how we grow. So no one is diminishing anybody's experience. But let's be honest, we live in a world where, like I said, identity, there's so many identities, so many different experiences. And naturally, because of that, people will experience things differently. So I felt like at the very beginning, when there wasn't much representation, if I was writing an article, I had to say what it's like to do egg freezing as a Black woman. But the reason why the ending of that article said as a Black woman, it's making the point that there isn't any articles that are representing a Black woman. So I'm putting it out there until we get to a time, and slowly but surely we are, where it's normalized and it's normal to see a Black woman, a Muslim woman, a LGBTQ couple, then we don't need to necessarily put that on there. It will probably just say our experience having IVF. But for now, that's been mentioned and that's put on there very loud and clear, because it's kind of saying what we need to know, that actually there aren't stories out there that are representing the different types of patients and people going through this experience that affects everybody, regardless of color, skin, religion, sexual orientation.
Absolutely. And the same boat, different storms is the perfect analogy, isn't it? Particularly for the life raft, because we are literally on a life raft here going through the storm, navigating.
Oh, I like this metaphorical analogy.
That's a very on brand there.
Definitely on sync.
I think there was also something I really wanted to ask you more around, and that was around your faith, not just, you know, that intersection you mentioned around being a Black woman and also the difficulty of talking to Catholics around IVF and what how that is, but also what it has given you. You know, how has your faith supported you through your journey?
I would say my faith has been a massive, massive part of my journey, probably the primary thing. Put it this way. I am not here to spread a message and say, you need to believe in Jesus or whatever it is. But everybody, if you think about it this way, simply put, everybody has something that they look to. Somebody might look at zodiac signs or crystals, charging crystals, or whatever it is. People even believe in the power. are you that girl? people believe in the power of manifestations or the law of attraction. If you look at it simplistically, it's that higher power. I'm specific in saying I believe in God and I believe in Jesus, but it's the essence of the higher power, like leaving it to the fate of what life gives, essentially. And so for me, that included reading my Bible. And a lot of these books that we read, if I'm being honest with you, Alice, so the Law of Attraction, a lot of those stuff in there is actually based on biblical principle, believe it or not. Most of the life coaches, you're in coaching, so you probably acknowledge this, a lot of the principles of how we deal with things and how we think about things and mindfulness, and I know that you're big on that, a lot of them actually, if you kind of go deeper, it's based on those principles, essentially. So for me, it was about the reading, the praying, and that definitely helped me. And like I said, let's be honest, I feel that I have had too many miraculous experiences to not believe in God. And I will say, to speak of my topic, so trigger warning again, no word of a lie, Alice, I should not be here. I had, you know, our fallopian tubes are tiny, and I had a 9-week-old fetus, or whatever it'd be described as, if I'm not going to go into the whole personhood thing, but a fetus that is trying to thrive in a tiny tube, and it had ruptured. And I remember going into the hospital, and a Spanish, I'm not good at accents, so I'm not going to try, a Spanish consultant saying, you should be upstairs, like, what are you doing here? And I remember when it started to get really painful, and I heard the registrar, because at a certain point when you have to go for surgery, they have to talk to you about the risks. They're telling you to sign, they're talking about the risk of death. And I remember them saying, why are we sitting on her? She needs to be in theatre now. Because I had that much blood in my uterus. So the point I'm making here is experiences like that is what makes me think I have been given another chance. It sounds like over the top, it's not compared to people that have had cancer, but in it was still a life-threatening situation. And the same thing with Elysian, my second son. This is somebody I conceived easier with one tube and a PCOS diagnosis. I remember when I got diagnosed, they said, right, okay, so here it is. This ultrasound that you did in November has confirmed that you've got one tube. So it was almost like I couldn't win. On one hand, on my left side, I had a fully functioning left ovary, but no tube, and a fully functioning right tube, but a blocked right ovary. Somehow, I became pregnant 3 months after this diagnosis with a tube. And that, remember, I'm coming from a place of having unexplained infertility, where there shouldn't have been any reason why I shouldn't get pregnant, but didn't get pregnant. But in the circumstance that I just explained, all reasons I shouldn't have been pregnant. And I did get pregnant, and it was a difficult pregnancy, but gave birth to a healthy boy. So it's those things that I look at, those anecdotes that I look at and think, that it strengthens my faith more, that there is a God that was helping me, essentially. But like I said, I am sensitive to the fact that some people, for many reasons, will not necessarily identify with that way of, how do I get through this journey? But essentially, I think there's a certain point in the fertility journey or infertility journey, that you are looking for that source and that higher power to kind of give you that guidance and hope that everything will align and everything will be okay. And for me, that was God, essentially. So again, I've kind of gone a long way around, but it's because I'm, yeah.
I think, yeah, I thank you so much for that. And, you know, as I say, what we do in the Life Raft is, you know, I am very much here to help and support people, and I encourage them to find their own thing. You mentioned, you said it so beautifully, everyone has something they look to. So whatever that is that you look to that gives you what your faith gives you and how that supports you, that's the thing that you go to, and that's the thing that is your, that is part of your Life Raft, and that you continue to, you know, stock up your Life Raft supplies, as I like to say. So for you, that's reading your Bible. For you, that's, you know, going to church, presumably, you know, being surrounded by all the people that have the similar views and beliefs as you do. And the fact that you're able, you know, to use that and just to put it down for a moment and to give it over, I think that was what you were saying there, is to sort of almost just go, okay, I'm giving over.
The irony, actually, Alice, is whilst I say this, I could be completely contradicting myself now, is the challenges were the fact that, particularly in a church setting, that's where you get the pushback, and people will say something like, well, maybe it's not meant to be. Maybe God doesn't want you to have children. Or you'll have people that will say, are you praying enough? Are you fasting enough? Or have you committed a sin that's probably punishing you? And I go further by saying the reason why that strengthened my faith is because I felt like I got to know God in a different way. You know, so we have we believe in this God that, you know, is creator of all things and kind of decides and this and that, but it kind of challenged my faith in a way that I need to know God as a protector or someone who's looking after me, or even in what felt like extreme suffering, still had my back. So this, that I believe that there's a difference in being spiritual and being religious. Yes. Religion can be very doctrinous and very one way of thinking, and you know, a bit kind of square. So I'm saying that it changed my perception of God and who he is, because I kind of had to move from, no, like God isn't transactional in the fact that, oh, because maybe because I've been a bad person in my life, that this is why it's happening. Because let's be honest, you have drug dealers, all of us that have been through fertility will say, how did that person that's taken drugs or has been drinking to oblivion have a healthy baby? And how am I, who is, you know, having beetroot juice and fries on my transfer days, why am I still struggling? And this is the reason why I thought, actually, that's why we shouldn't be so square in our thinking. Like, my faith isn't transactional. I had to look at God from a different point of view. I don't have to do X, Y, Z, and then finally he gives me my present. Like, I've had to believe that God is good because he's good. Mm. Even when things don't go the way that I wanted to. So yes, church, believers, religion can also be quite counterproductive, but it helped me to go one step further in, like, finding out who God was for me, particularly in that journey.
Love that. Thank you so much for that. That difference of, like, getting to know, for you, getting to know God in a different way, that transaction idea of, like, it's not a transactional thing, it's not quite as literal. And it's taking that one step further, and exactly what we do in the Life Raft, continual self-development and really exploring this stuff that comes up all the time, right? So you have these questions, you're like, mean then, if this isn't happening, what does it mean if this isn't happening? Then that, instead of going, well, then that means, you know, he doesn't exist, or higher power doesn't exist, or whatever, perhaps it's that there's more to uncover, perhaps there's more conversations to be had, whatever it is, you know. And people listening to this who are like, what, you know, this is where are we going here? But I think that it's such a fascinating conversation to have, because so many people I speak to who have been through fertility, you know, either have a faith, and I'm quite intentional with my language too, and I think using the word faith is helpful, because it speaks to people in all different religions, you know, whether you're spiritual, or you go to you know, you're Muslim or whatever it is. If you have a faith, it's this idea of having something around you which is supporting you. And I think actually Fern Cotton talks really well on this, and with her book Bigger Than Us, which I actually haven't read. It's on my list, Fern, not that you'll ever probably hear this, but you know, she speaks of the idea of just exploring this idea that there is a higher power, and for her it's in a different way, but it's And I've spoken with a really good friend of mine before, actually. I know we're on a time here, but I'm going to just say it quickly.
That's okay. Just go with the flow.
Okay. A really good friend who is a Christian, and we have had so many interesting conversations. You know, I'm not, but we've had so many interesting conversations around this, and we share a lot of similar thoughts and views, and, you know, we have amazing conversations around it. And I think that's what I love to encourage here. It's just that open dialogue, you know, and exploring and hearing from people what their faith has given them, or what is in their life raft, you know, that supports them. And, you know, as you say, that's something to look to, I think, is a really, really nice way of putting it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for understanding and seeing. Yeah.
Always. I mean, I could go on and on with this because I think it's absolutely fascinating. But we will another time. I'm going to meet you for a nice glass of wine maybe one day.
I like what I'm hearing.
And we can explore further. Just to see where we are now with everything that you've kind of taken from your journey, everything that you've learned, everything that has come from it. What do you hope to see in the future?
Something that I want to see in terms of change is access. Like, through my work, I say this really carefully because I'm comparing this to, like, our American advocates who have spoken about remortgaging their houses, paying, like, trying, praying that the insurance will cover one cycle. And meanwhile, there's some people that have gone through it 12 times and God knows how they've been able to fund or cover it. But let's be honest, we still have our challenges. So I do hope that access becomes better. We speak a lot about the postcode lottery. And I was gobsmacked when I heard, I think it was somewhere in Scotland, that there's some people that are getting like three free funded fresh cycles of IVF and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I guess from an access kind of view and just availability, I hope that there can be more that's put, because I find it strange how there's a lot of tabloids that talk about the fact that there's there was a couple of months ago, there was something around women are having children later and the population or something's going down and people are worried. I'm just thinking, at the same time, I still feel like in some respects the fertility is really underfunded, and I think more could be put towards it. And I'm talking about this more from the health point of view. So before we get to this stage of realizing something's not quite right, and I don't know why I can't get pregnant and have children, it's the education around what could be contributing to that. So very early education and awareness around how we can advocate for realizing that, oh, I'm having irregular periods, could it be PCOS? Helping people to identify, you know, when they need to be going to a doctor or a GP. Something that really irked me was I had to kind of lie or almost rush myself to say, yes, we're ready for babies, because if that wasn't the case, the GP basically said, come back to me when you're ready to start a family. But it was like, but why are we treating contributing diseases or issues according to reproduction? Why can't they just be treated? So I'm hoping that there's a more joined up treatment framework. Remember, going back to this whole thing about women's health, this is why I'm passionate about it. Mm. It just needs to be a bit more of a joined up framework around women just advocating for their health full stop, as opposed to saying, come back to me when you're ready to start or try for a family. That was really annoying. And in some respects, it was a blessing in disguise that I had to kind of say, yep, we're ready to have a family, because we kind of were open to it. But I just felt, how about somebody who is completely frightened and so not ready about the prospect of having children, but would have to kind of almost pretend just for the sake of getting things seen to? Like, that's just wrong. It doesn't sound right. It's almost quite unethical, if I'm being honest with you.
I think, well, exactly as you say, the joined up thinking, and Lucy's saying there in the chat that I totally agree with access, and health awareness. It's a huge stress on top of an already stressful situation. Absolutely. Yeah, why does it take until we get to the point where we're ready to say we want to have children? For, I mean, I was the same. I had irregular periods forever, you know, since they started when I was 13. I never ever had a regular period. So why on earth was I not having that conversation, you know, at 14, 15, and going and having a sensible conversation about why I had a regular period? You know, they were really irregular. So obviously there was something going on, but you know, we were just told to take the pill and get on with it, and that's what I was told anyway.
Yeah, a lot of issues were treated with the pill, and I'm hearing that a lot of the issues that we have now were actually caused by what was supposed to treat us, the pill. So yeah,
so much that needs to be, well, that's the thing. I mean, I, for me, I think you're absolutely right, you know, the access and the conversation, just women's health in general has been you know, there's a huge issue with funding that and creating a normal conversation about it when we're in school, so that people understand what is normal, what is not normal, how to get pregnant, and you know, what happens when things do go wrong, so that you have the support in place. I mean, for me, what I want to see is more support as well, you know, when you do find that you're, you know, going through an ectopic or going through a fertility treatment, just that mental health well-being support should be accessible to everybody, and it should just be normal that you access it, instead of people struggling and, you know, going through it by themselves. And being connected, having a network of people is so life-changing, really, because it's,
you know, something else I'd like to see more, and I'm sure, you know, Millie's, Hannah, Sarah, everybody who's listening today, that really touched me, was I feel like Jennifer Aniston changed the game on how we talk about fertility. I admire the fact that even though she's done it and she deserves to, and she's got every right to be ready to speak about it when she wanted to, however many years later, based on how long it was going on for, I like the fact that she's definitely opened up. There have been people doing the work, but I like the fact that she's opened up as a celebrity, the conversation around actually the denouement of infertility might not always end with a baby. And again, I'm ending by saying this carefully, because I feel fortunate and blessed and happy that mine has, but I hope and pray that we see more of that, people that are saying, I think there's even an article that I'm yet to read, so I think it's, I can't remember who it's by, but I know that it was written by an American journalist. I'll try and find it and send it to you so you can share it with your network.
Thank
but
you.
This article about these five ladies,
Yes, I have.
So have you noticed that ever since Jennifer Aniston, people are now opening that conversation of actually, what about the eventuality where you've been through all of this and you might not have a baby? My hope is actually, when you think about it and you think about all the options that should hopefully start to get normalized, there is kind of, you can more or less get there if you're open to adopting. But let's be honest, there are some people that might not be, they might want their biological baby. And in that respect, that's where the conversation around what if that doesn't happen. I do wonder if that conversation continues to move forward, how it might change. I can't even fathom how frightening it would be to even start to think, what if that is my eventuality? I don't even want to go there.
Well, you know what, there's something, you know, I do talk about that. And even though there's like lots of coaches and lots of mindset people won't do it because they think that it, anyway, for whatever reason, they won't do it. I've had lots of people actually on the podcast who talk. So Kat Brown, who's been on, who's amazing. Mind Body Revival coach. So Aisha, she's fantastic. Yep. She's come on and talked about that with me before. And, you know, I do speak to it as well on my thing, because I feel like if we don't at least put it out there and just have it as something that is a possibility, it makes it so much more scary, you know. And actually fear becomes much bigger when we don't simply just sit down with it and have a conversation about it and just say, okay, let's just put that on the table and let's think about what that would look like and how that feels, you know. And because it can be terrifying and overwhelming and hideous, and I've been there myself. I just, that the fear was horrendous. So I really think that you're so right, the fact that she's opening the conversation, and Jennifer Aniston is amazing, we love her anyway, but the fact that she's been able to finally say it from, and I just kind of thought, well, thank God she's been able to have her own say finally, after all these years of the speculation, the questions and the comments that she must have had to deal with over that time when she was going through IVF. It must have been horrific. So, you know,
the thing is, what I will say is, she started the conversation, but I think there would be a, without diminishing the influence and the impact is the word I'm looking for, it's had, I think there would be greater impact with someone who is normal. And I'll tell you why, because motherhood as a journey, or if I have to say so myself, seen as a destination, is very much associated with purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, billionaire as she is, and might, that even if it might not mean anything to her, I imagine that because of her purpose and where she's up in the world in terms of influence, who knows, that that might have made it easier for her to talk about it.
I think that's a really interesting topic, yeah, to speak with. And I think that, yeah, the fact that she has had such an incredible life on so many levels, and the fact that she's so clearly connected. I mean, I'm looking at time here, but you know, what I love to support people with is that connection to their true selves, their core, their soul, everything. That when you're connected to that, which she looks like she really is.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a connectedness there.
She's just so Jennifer, you know.
She's Jennifer, and like I said, because of this intrinsic association and link between parenthood, motherhood, and purpose, because her purpose is also very much affiliated with how well she's done in her acting. Not everybody who wakes up has that perception of success. So what I'm basically saying is, someone like myself or yourself or anybody else who's kind of doing the work that is not as big deal as her, if they speak about it, I potentially think it could be more relatable, because how do you see purpose if you don't have a child but you're still living in normal world doing a 9-to-5, compared to an actress who, like I said, I can't imagine that it still would have been painful regardless of who she is. It definitely was painful, but actually there could be things there.
Completely. But I think of course she's like an extreme example of, you know, living this like incredible purpose and being herself, but there are micro examples of finding meaning and purpose which I think is so vital to redirecting your mindset when you're going through fertility. When we shift the narrative that, you know, you're worthy when you become a mother, or your life has meaning and purpose once you have a baby, once we start to reclaim that and say, actually, I'm purposeful as I am right now, here today, you know, listening to this podcast, I have meaning and purpose in my life now, you know, that's when we start to shift actually that disassociation between, that's what you get once you have a child, you know. Of course it shifts, as you said right at the beginning, you know, life is always evolving and you're always evolving, and that's absolutely right. So I could talk to you for hours, but we need to wrap up. Thank you so much. And I'm really just saying in the chat there about when you were sharing your story, gosh, how moving, and your words about faith so beautifully put, and I completely agree. Lucy's saying, totally think the language is so important. Also love the growing rather than starting a family. 100%. So just big thanks to everyone who could join us live today. Vanessa, thank you so, so much. Where can people find you if they're listening?
Oh, where can people find me? So on Instagram, Vanessa Haye, Haye, no S on the end. On Twitter, which I'd say I'm more kind of connected when I'm writing articles. There's a presence, but not as big presence as Instagram. The handle is Vanessa Haye. I'll write it in the chat before I go. And then on my, if you want to read my articles and my blog, which has been quite stagnant at the moment, but I'm trying to resurrect it soon. No religious puns there. everything's quite metaphorical, and there's quite a few puns in this chat. That is vanessahaye.com/blog, or just go on to vanessahaye.com and you'll find my articles, my portfolio. And please, just wanted to say, I have a kind of open door policy that I'm welcome for people to message me in my chats if you want to have a chat. It might take not quite a while. It might take a while to get back to me. I'm trying to kind of, you know, keep up with everything. But I do, if you want to have a chat or you want to email me, I will get back to you. I'd love to speak to you. But thank you so much, Millie, Hannah, Sarah, Alice, for joining me. It's been amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been an absolute honour to have you, and a privilege. So thank you, Vanessa, so, so much.
I'm just literally writing my handle.
In the chat.
Yeah, in the chat. So... So IG, oh, I spelt my name wrong. That's not a good start. At Vanessa Haye.
That was an amazing conversation with Vanessa. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Fertility Life Raft. I really love that we have conversations that span all manner of topics, and it feels very freeing to just explore. As Vanessa was saying, you know, keep taking that step further and see what comes up, you know. And if anything ever feels difficult when you're listening to these podcast, if anything ever feels triggering or anything, please do reach out to me. This is Alice Rose on Instagram, or come to my website and have a look at what I can do to support you in your mindset and self-development, and also go and take a look at Vanessa's writing. It's fantastic. But sending out all of the love as ever. Thank you to my Life Raft members who could join us live. If you are listening to this and you have taken something from it, if you found it interesting, please do share this podcast with people that you know, that people that you don't know, screenshot it, pop on Instagram, let's keep the conversation going, and do leave us a review as well. That is really super super helpful. I'm really proud. Do you know what, I'm so proud of how many reviews we've got. It's pretty good. I think we're on about 250 or something like that, which is mega. So a massive thank you to you if you have left one for me, and if you haven't yet, please do go and do your good deed for the day. All right, I'm gonna love you and leave you, sending out all of the love as ever. Take care, lots of love.